Hello, in this audio snippet, we were planning to continue talking about the Civil War in Black America. I believe that before we continue to talk about that topic, we need to revisit some of the things that we shared in the previous audio snippet about the four signs that America is not responding to what it needs to respond to. It's not responding to the truth, and therefore is on the verge of dying. And the reason why we're revisiting those four examples that we talked about before is because after sharing the thoughts in the previous audio snippet, I ran into some information that I was not aware of. And I realized this is important, and it kind of this additional information gave greater depth to the meaning of these four seemingly random things that were mentioned in the previous audio clip. As you may recall, if you listened to the previous audio snippet, we talked about four things: the special election in Alaska that Sarah Palin lost, and that was number one. Number two was the flooding of illegal aliens into the country, and a comment made by a very well-known conservative who spoke of the demise of the country. And third, we talked about the sending of illegals across the country, and how that could have been taken as an opportunity to call for a deeper change, but it really hasn't. And we talked about the idea of shipping illegals to Puerto Rico instead of shipping them to the places that they're being sent to by DeSantis and other and Greg Abbott in Texas. And then we talked about the rebellion that's going on even as we speak in Iran. And how that reflects on us, on America, and the West in general, but more specifically America. So those were the four things: the Palin special election, illegal aliens, and the comment by this conservative called Jim Hoft. And the third thing was the shipping of aliens and Puerto Rico. And the fourth thing is the Iran rebellion. And the things that I found about the Palin election were kind of stunning to me. They were so odd that it became even clearer that that election was no coincidence at all, and that it reflects that election is very significant in the context of what's going on in the country, and how it's on the verge of being completely dead. And the things that I found was that to kind of get a sense of it, we have to kind of go back in time and go back to 1972. And in 72, Nixon was ending his first term. He was elected in 68, and was in office until 74, when he resigned because of the Watergate scandal. So in 72, he was still the president, and there was an election. That was an election year, and by the way, Nixon won the election on a landslide, beating, if I'm not mistaken, very sad candidate put up by the Democrats, George McGovern. And McGovern was the poster child of liberalism, of this soft and bleeding heart liberalism. And when he lost by such a wide margin to Nixon, That was the beginning of the what I would call the liberal rage that we're still living through, literally living through. It hasn't stopped. That was the birth of the liberal rage, and the liberals vowed that they would destroy Nixon because of what he had done to their pathetic little candidate. He wasn't that evil or mean. He was just this like grandfatherly person who just believed that. He was like an old hippie in a sense, and but the people who followed him were much more radical and violent, you could say, in their nature, and so that's why they got Nixon in the Watergate scandal. It just needed something to catch him, and that's why the Watergate scandal was blown out of proportion. Compared to what was done, has been done recently in the 2020 elections, and how Obastard was spying on Trump and things like that. I mean, the Watergate is nothing. It's a nothing burger, and even so, it was taken out of proportion because the liberals were out to destroy Nixon for having embarrassed their beloved McGovern the way that he did in the 72 election. So those were the times. And by the way, what I mean by liberal rage is that from that day on, it's as if the liberals said, we will destroy anyone who disagrees with us. And it was the beginning of that, those tactics of destroying people, smearing their reputation, anyone who disagrees with them, who makes them feel bad, who opposes them in any significant way, who poses any threat to their agenda, is to be attacked and destroyed. And liberal rage bases a lot of its destruction on the violation of one of the five fundamental human rights, the right to a fair reputation. As we've shared before, there are five human rights: the right to life, the right to property, the right to right to privacy, the right to a fair reputation, and the right to a personal domain, and they like to violate that right, the right to a fair reputation. They destroy people, and they also are very physical in their attacks. The liberals are the ones who are most prone to physical violence against the people that they disagree with, and they never see that as a bad sign. When the other side does anything remotely close to a form of physical violence, it is overblown, and it is shown as an example of how the right wing is so evil and destructive, and they're Nazis and this and that and the other. But when they do it, for some reason, they look in the mirror and they don't see anything wrong. It's as if everything they do is okay, and when other people do a minor variation of what they are doing, or a minor in a small magnitude, it's as if it was the greatest evil on earth. But the thing is that going back to 72, that was an election year, and in Alaska, the election for the House seat was done, as it's done regularly. And by the way, Alaska, I did not know this. Alaska only has one representative in Congress, in the House of Representatives. And that's interesting because they have two senators and one representative. And usually states have, you know, two senators in the Senate and a whole bunch of representatives. So Alaska is one of the few states that has more senators than representatives, and that's because the House has representation based on population. And Alaska, even though it's geographically the largest state in the country, in the U.S., in America, it has a very small population. I think it might be the fourth smallest population, and because of that, it only has one representative. And so the election was held in 72 for that seat. And at that time, there were two candidates running. One was Nick Begich. I'm not sure how to pronounce that name. I'll just assume that's how you pronounce it. Nick Begich Senior. And he was running for re-election that year. And he ran against a Republican. He was a Democrat. And he was running that year against a fellow named Donald Young. And Donald Young was the Republican candidate. And Nick Begich was on some sort of of flight, and he they were on board a twin engine Cessna 310, and they were flying from Anchorage to Juneau, from one city in Alaska to another, and apparently something happened to the flight. And it just disappeared, and they searched for it, and nothing was found. At least they were not found, neither the plane nor any of the passengers. There were four people flying with. Flying in that plane, including this Congressman Nick Begich, and he was also with the House Majority Leader Hale Boggs of Louisiana, but they were not found, so they just simply disappeared, and to this day they have not found his body, so he was just gone, and he was declared dead on December 29th of 1972. And this happened, so the flight was on October 16th, 1972. And he just disappeared. Now, the election was held in November, as usual. And in November, even though he had not been found yet, he was still on the ballot and he won the election. So, assuming he actually died in that in a crash. On that day in October, he literally won the election posthumously, and he won by a wide margin over Donald Young, and but because he could not be found, he was declared dead on this in December of at the end of December of that year. Then obviously he couldn't go to Congress to represent Alaska, so even though he won the election. That was basically the nullifying of the election, and they held a special election in 73 the next year, and Donald Young obviously participated in that special election, and other candidates ran as well, and but Donald Young won, and that's how he ended up in Congress. So interestingly, a Democrat died. And then he was and even though he lost the election, he was able to become the next congressman for Alaska in a special election. Now think about that special election. Just like in 2022, there was the special election with Palin. In 1973, there was the special election to fill the seat of a dead congressman, because in a sense, the seat was won by a dead person, and they needed to replace that dead person, and that's why they had that special election. So Donald Young went into went into Congress, and he stayed there for 49 years. So he kept getting reelected and reelected and reelected, and he was. If I'm not mistaken, the longest serving Republican in congressional history. So, now think about this. So this was not just any guy. He was the longest running Republican in the history of the United States, in American history, from the founding of the Republican Party in the late 1840s till now, no Republican congressman had ever held the office as long as this guy. He was there for 49 years. And how did his term end? Well, he died as well. So I hope you see the parallels. There was this Democrat incumbent who died, and then a special election had to be held to fill his seat. Now this, and in this case, again, Donald Young died in, if I'm not mistaken, in March of 2022, and when he died, then that seat was left empty, and that was why they needed the special election. And so he represents the Republican Party, and everything that he, in a sense, represents traditionalism, the traditional Republican Party. And what by traditional I mean the standard Republican Party. He's in a sense the prototypical Republican. And interestingly enough, he was the last congressman to have ever been elected from the Nixon years. So he represented Nixon. Nixon was a rhino, as they call as they're called, you know, Republican in name only, R-I-N-O, rhino. And Nixon was he seemed like a conservative or a person who was not of the left. He had developed a reputation at the beginning of his political career as a staunch anti-communist. And he was Eisenhower's vice president. Eisenhower was the president from 1953, you could say, to 1960. So he was the president of the United States for most of the 1950s, and Nixon was his vice president, and Nixon eventually became president. But when he became president, he showed his true colors in the sense he believed in price controls. He believed in a very intrusive government, and he also began the closeness with China, and he began to reach out to China, even though China was still in the throes of being controlled by that son of a bitch who was burning in hell, Mao Zedong. So he was the first president to visit China, and we all know the story about that. And that was significant because him being an anti-communist, reaching out to this, you know, bastard communist, and to this communist country called China, and so he opened the door for all of that. And so, and Nixon was not really a person who had a real vision for the country. He was just a rhino. And so it's interesting that this guy is the last congressman from that era. He represents the Nixon Republican Party, this party that doesn't really stand for anything. They're the opposition. They're the non-Democrats. And but that's all they are, and they don't really stand for much more. And every now and then they throw out a kind of a nugget of what conservatives call, you know, their conservatism, or that makes them unique. But it's just a nugget here and there, and then they seem to be just like the Democrats. That's what this guy was for 49 years, and the people of Alaska kept voting for him. Over and over and over again for 49 years, he was their representative. And and also that means he represents what's wrong with the party system that we've talked about. The reason why these people can run and be reelected so many times is because of the party system that we've described in great length. It's not a problem of term limits. It's a problem of of party control. And you kiss enough butts, you get a foot in the door. And once you get a foot in the door, then the party system allows you to become entrenched. And you would say, well, if they had party term limits, this wouldn't be the problem. You don't realize if there were term limits, this Don Young would be replaced by another version of Don Young, or worse, by a Democrat, a full-blown radical left-wing Democrat. So that's not the problem. The problem is that the party system allows these people to stay in power and not do anything whilst in power, not do anything meaningful or helpful. So this Donald Young was he represents this Republican Party that's just there as a controlled opposition, as conservatives always say, and who doesn't really stand for anything significant. And just to give you an idea, I remember many years ago this story that people would talk about the bridge to nowhere, and that was back in 2005. And this bridge was called the Gravina Island Bridge, and it went from a place in Alaska called Ketchikan, I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing it right, to an island called Gravina Island. And the thing is that the bridge would be for access by emergency vehicles and passengers and all that, and it was to replace or to kind of serve in place of a ferry that was there to do the crossing. It's a 3 to 7 minute crossing, and the bridge cost $223 million. That was what the bill was that had been passed was for. So this guy was able to earmark $223 million for this bridge. And the New York Times and other people began to call it the bridge to nowhere. You know, this humongous, you know, almost a fifth of a billion dollars, and we're talking about 2005. In those days, a fifth of $1 billion was already a lot of money, and just to connect these two places that are, you know, so scarcely populated, because it was criticized and everything. Congress ended up defunding the bridge and kind of using that money for the Alaska. They kind of gave it to the Alaska Department of Transportation, and Alaska used that money to build the Gravina Island Highway, and so it was kind of misused anyway, just in a different thing, in a different project. But Don Young and another guy were responsible for earmarking all this money to this bridge to nowhere, and I remember that's, you know, the headlines and the stories about the bridge to nowhere, kind of a symbolism of government pork spending. But it's also a figure of this guy and the Republican Party. They are the bridge to nowhere. They represent this transition into nothingness, into nothing significant, because that's what a bridge is. A bridge represents a transition from one sphere to another, and that's what the country needs. The country needs a bridge to transform it into a new nature, and that's what America is refusing to do. It's like they stand in front of the bridge. And America knows it needs to get out of there because the destruction is coming. And how can they save themselves from the destruction? They have to cross the bridge and get to the other place that they have to be. And America keeps saying, no, I'm not crossing the bridge. I don't want the bridge. I don't care for the bridge. I don't need no bridge. I just need to make some changes, but the destruction is coming, and if they don't cross the bridge, they will die. But America says that we don't want the bridge, and they start building other bridges, but they're bridges to nowhere, bridges that just leave them in the same place, and that's what this guy represents. And just as a side note, even though this guy showed during his career kind of hints or tinges of non-liberal thinking or free market capitalism, and every now and then he would say something that would rile liberals, but he would always immediately apologize, like, "Oh, I'm so sorry, I hurt the people of Alaska for saying this or that." And so he was always kind of sometimes trying to show a certain spunk, or, you know, a certain character. But every time he did, and people would attack him, he would just step back. Typical Republican. Republicans are cowards for the most part. They're afraid of being the victims of that liberal rage that started in 72. So I hope you're seeing this is all representative of something that's been going on in the country. And now this guy, just to give you an idea, he also had some thoughts that are kind of more consistent with liberalism. He was a big supporter of reforming marijuana laws or cannabis laws. And being a Republican, and, you know, that's the sort of thing you expect from idiot Democrats, like what's been happening here in the New York, New Jersey area, where marijuana smoking has been legalized. And I've shared in other audio snippets what a problem that has been, how repulsive the smell of cannabis is in New York City when you're walking around and you get these sudden attacks of that horrendous smell as you're walking down the street in Manhattan, not in the Bronx, not in Harlem, in the middle of Manhattan, in places that you would think are of a good reputation, you could say, and in New Jersey, it's the same story. So, well, this guy was for all of that nonsense. And and he was also, when in 2016, he was a supporter of Jeb Bush, just to give you an idea that he is the typical Republican. And also then later supported a guy called John Kasich, another piece of dirt Republican. And he hated Trump in 2016. He said, "I'm not supporting Donald Trump." And he said that when asked about Trump being so successful in the primaries, he said, quote, that it was due to a bunch of idiots following a Pied Piper over the edge of the cliff, unquote. So he was this vocal critic, a Republican. That's what he represented. And the people of Alaska were voting for him. Just keep that in mind. Alaska was not outraged when he said these things. You know, he still got reelected. He did later kind of begin to be supportive of some of what Trump was doing. I'm not sure if he was doing it because Trump was so popular and he wanted to stay popular with the people of Alaska. I'm not sure. Or maybe he started trusting Trump's policies. I don't know. And he did oppose the impeachment. He voted against the first and the second impeachments of Trump. So you could say he kind of redeemed himself, sort of, kind of. But on November 7th of 2020, the election was, I believe, November 3rd or no, sorry, November 6th. It was around that time. Like 1 or 2 days after the election, when the senile bastard stole the election, Donald Young was one of the first Republicans to congratulate the son of a bitch, the senile bastard, Joe Biden, and he acknowledged the election. He acknowledged him as the quote victor and congratulated him, and he was one of the first Republicans to do so. And he on January 6th, you know, the famous January 6th, the days of the quote riots, and people walking into the Capitol building. Oh my goodness, what a horrible thing! The people who paid for the whole building walking into it. Oh my goodness, that is so evil. So the thing is that on January 6th of 2021, Young voted against the objections to counting the electoral votes from Arizona and Pennsylvania. So that tells you what a piece of trash at the end of the day this guy was. A useless piece of meat, that's all he was. He was just occupying the seat. And if you go through the history of you know, what he, quote, accomplished, he was the longest-serving Republican in American history. You would think that you would see a list of all these accomplishments, all these things that are ideas. He never did anything. He was just a placeholder. That's all he was. And that shows you, once again, the problem with the party system. It's not a party of people with innovative ideas who are there to produce, because the system is not conducive to that. You are there to represent the party, and you're beholden to the party, and if the party controls Congress, then you can get a chairmanship. In some committee, and then you're more powerful, and this and that and the other. It's all party related. It's not individuals. And if we destroy, if we were willing to castrate the American party system, as we've described in previous audio snippets, then we'd have people with independent thinking, individuals drafting bills without having to submit to any party agenda or officials behind the scenes to succeed. And it would be just a competition of ideas constantly. Individuals, not party members, drafting bills and not needing the party support to have the bill get voted on. We've described all of that before. But he represents the party system and the corruption of this staleness of the Republican Party. For 49 years, this guy really didn't do anything, anything really of value. And the people of Alaska kept voting for him. So then the special. So what happened was in March of 2020, this guy died. And just like Nick Begich had died, notice there's a lot of interesting things here. In 1972, Nick Begich, the guy that Donald Young replaced in Congress, died on an airplane flight. Donald Young, in March of 2022, in March, so it was like right at the beginning of the lockdowns, I would some say that the lockdowns began on March 20th. So it was more or less that the locking down happened between March 13th and March 20th of 2020. He died right in within that week. And he was flying, if I'm not mistaken, to from Los Angeles to Seattle, if I'm not mistaken. And he basically the plane. I think he lost consciousness while during the flight from Los Angeles to Seattle. He was going to Alaska, and then he was declared dead after the plane landed at Seattle Tacoma International Airport, And he was with his wife in the flight and his communications director. So he died on an airplane, just like the guy he replaced. So Nick Begich, in a sense, represents the death, the moral death of the Democrat Party. because the Democrat Party died, you could say, it's corruption. It's just total corruption began in 1972. And we said that's what when the liberal rage began, and the Democrat Party just began this total decline from then on. Because even before that, there was a mixture of decent people, if you can call it that, quote-unquote, and I say that with big quotes, in the Democrat Party. At least they were not nut job liberals the way they are now. And that's when the decline began, the total death of the Democrat Party, represented by the death of Nick Begich. And so, and just like that, in that same way, the Republican died, Donald Young, on a flight in 2020. And conservatism and the Republican Party died in 2020. And I remember that in January, I had this sense through something that's too long to explain here, that the Red Party was dead. And that was in early January, this awareness, or late December. I forget the exact date, but it was in that period, very cold night. I became aware that the Red Party, which is the Republican Party, was dead. And then it was reflected on January 6th when Miguelito Pence approved of the fraud and the stealing of the election that he was stolen from, literally. But he said it's okay if Democrats steal the vice presidency from me, I don't care. And he that's, I guess, when the death of the Republican Party became official. So he represented the death of the Republican Party, but he didn't die in a tragic plane accident. He died just a death of nothingness. He lost consciousness on a flight from Los Angeles to Seattle, and he was declared dead. It was not a tragic crash or anything of that sort. He just died. He died of nothingness. That's what he represented. And that's what the Republican Party represented. And it's ironic that his name was Young, his surname was Young, because he died very old at the age of 88, having done nothing. So having the name of youngness or youth, he just represented staleness and nothingness. And that's a symbolism of the Republican Party. The Republican Party is the junior party of the United States because they were born in the 1840s after the Democrat Party. So the Democrat Party is the senior party, you could say. The Republican Party is the junior party. And you would expect the junior party to be the party of freshness and youngness, and it was at the beginning. But then something happened, and when we get back to the Civil War, in 1874, we will talk about what happened there. And that was the beginning of the death of the Republican Party. And that's why 100 years later in 1974, the Republican Party had its biggest shameful moment when Nixon resigned because of the Watergate scandal. And it's not a coincidence, exactly 100 years later, 1874 was the beginning of the death of the Republican Party. And the party just officially died in 2020. So this is what this guy represents. He had a name of youth, of being young, but he acted like an old man who doesn't do anything. So it's fitting that he was one of the first Republicans to congratulate an old man who doesn't do anything, as having won the election in 2020. So that's Donald Young. And then we had the special election that we have been talking about. And we mentioned that in that election, there were three candidates, Sarah Palin, and for a Republican, Nick Begich, a Republican, and Maria, and I keep forgetting her name. It's Mary Peltola or Peltola, who knows how they pronounce it. And she was a Democrat. Now, notice I said Nick Begich was one of the candidates. This was Nick Begich III. So it turns out that in this special election, the grandson of the Nick Begich who died in 72 was running to occupy the seat. Do you see the coincidence there? Like the grandson of this guy who disappeared in some crash, no one ever found the body or the plane. His grandson is running in the special election of 2022 against Sarah Palin and Mary Peltola. But the weird thing is that this Nick Begich III was running as a Republican, and the strange thing is that his grandfather Nick Begich I was a Democrat. So why was this guy running as a Republican? I wouldn't know. I mean, maybe he is the black sheep of the family, or maybe he was just a token Republican or kind of a fake Republican. Who knows? The thing is that most of his family is Democrat. And so if you go and look up information on this Nick Begich III, you're going to find that most of his family, a lot of his family is involved in politics, and they are all Democrats. So so why was this guy running as a Republican? And I would dare say he was part of the Republican Party's effort to keep people like Sarah Palin out of Congress. And that's not not a coincidence, you could say. And it's a symbolism of the problem with the party system. The party would rather have lose a seat in Congress than have people who are opposed or not kind of aligned with the party system be elected. Because to them, party power is more important than furthering the country or furthering principles or ideas. So that's why actually the Republican Party endorsed Nick Begich III for that seat instead of supporting Sarah Palin. So Sarah Palin was the dark horse or the underdog. She was kind of running as, yes, technically a Republican, but she didn't have the Alaskan Republican Party support. And so that you know kind of begs the question, why was he running as a Republican? Well, I would dare say he was kind of working with the Democrats and with the Republican Party to try to split the vote and undermine Sarah Palin. That was the intent. And some would argue that he succeeded, but he really didn't do that because, as we tried to explain before, Begich, he ended up third in the first round. Peltola got like 40% of the vote, and Palin got 31% of the vote, and Begich the third got 28.5 or 29% of the vote. So he ended up third, and you would say, oh yeah, he split the vote because 40% voted for Democrats and the other 60% kind of got split almost half and half between Palin and Begich the third. So you'd say, oh, that Palin would have won, but no, because this was ranked choice voting. So because of it, and we tried to explain it before, basically the runoff happened without having to have a runoff because people voted their second choice in. So when Begich was eliminated from the voting, then all the people who voted for Begich, you know, had the choice of who would have they voted for would they have voted for had Begich not been there? That was their second choice in the votes. And 50, I forget the exact amount, but I think it was 50% of the Begich voters had Palin as their second choice, and only 25 or something like that had the Democrat Peltola. But so Palin got most of Begich's votes, but not enough to overtake the Democrats, and so she lost by a narrow margin to the Democrat. And so, in other words, if this kind of a distraction, Begich the third, this monkey wrench that was thrown into to prevent Palin getting elected by the Republicans, if he had not been there, Palin would still have lost, because the people who voted for Begich were not that interested in having Palin elected. They were not would not have voted for Sarah Palin had Palin been the one running against Peltola without another Republican in on the ballot. So this was more a reflection of the people of Alaska not being that excited about Sarah Palin, not as excited enough, at least, to defeat the Democrat candidate. And we also explained before that had they used a different ranked choice voting system, instead of having this thing where the votes of the candidate with the least votes being reassigned to other candidates, instead of that, if we had just a straight up point system where your first choice gets 3 points, your second choice gets 2 points, and so forth, then the person who would have ended up winning would have been Begich. The Republicans would have kept that seat. So Begich more or less, so it's kind of ironic that he would have ended up getting elected. So that means that whichever way you cut it, if it had been like a straightforward, you know, election with no runoff, which is what conservatives would have liked to begin with, because they hate the confusion, quote unquote, of any system different from the current one, then Peltola would have won anyway. If there had only been two candidates, then Peltola would have won anyway. And if we had a fairer ranked choice voting system, then Begich would have won. So it was more a reflection of the Alaskan population, the same population that kept voting in Donald Young for 49 years. So you can't blame the ranked choice voting system for this. That's not what happened. Palin lost, not because of Palin herself. It's not her fault. It's the people of Alaska said, we don't want someone like Palin representing us. At least enough of them said that, and that's why she didn't win. And that's a reflection of America. America says, we don't want anyone who stirs the boat, rocks the boat. We don't want anyone with different ideas who's willing to challenge the party system, because that's what Sarah Palin represents. That's why she's hated by Republicans and Democrats. She represents this thing where you don't care about being politically correct. You don't care about your party seat. You don't care about your popularity within the hierarchy of upper hierarchy of the of your party. You just say what you believe in, and you stand for something, and you fight. That's what Sarah Palin represents, and that's why she's hated by her own party, and even more by the Democrats. And the people of Alaska said, we don't want someone like that. We are okay with the party system. We're okay with just people just sitting there pretending to do something and not really doing anything, just keeping the boat going. And that's what conservatives at a wider level and a more philosophical level believe in, even though they seem more radical in terms of believing in ideas and criticizing the Democrats and all that. At the end of the day, they only want to go back to the founding fathers and that debt system that doesn't work, that has proved itself not to work, and they want to go back to that. And so that's what that election represents. that someone who rose up who to say, I will build a bridge to somewhere. And they said, oh, no, I'm sorry. We don't want to go anywhere. We want to stay nowhere. We don't want to go anywhere. So please go away, bridge. We don't want you. And that's why they elected the Democrat. And that's a figure of the country, of America, saying we don't want any bridges to a new place. People who are willing to challenge things and take us to a different place. And sadly, also, Palin ended up criticizing the ranked choice voting system and blaming it for her loss because she was listening to the conservatives, you know, telling her that's why you lost. So she kind of fell for it, too. And that's also a figure of how even the very best in the American political system are clueless at the end of the day about many things. And so that's what that election was, that special election kind of was hiding. And I hope that you saw the patterns and how that election is representative of how America is unwilling to accept the bridge to a new place. And they want to stay within the party system, the political party system that is, you know, killing the country, and the country will be dead. And I must say that the country will be dead in 12 months. I thought we had like 13 months. I think we only have 12 months. Yes, we only have 12 months. We don't have 13 months. We have less than a year left. And if the country doesn't respond in some significant way, it will die. So this, this was the first sign, you could say this Palin election was a sign that America is saying we don't want a change to the party system. We don't want a change to the way things are being run right now. We just want to stay the way we are. We don't want a bridge to a future. And then the second thing that we talked about, the second sign, was illegal aliens and the comments by this conservative Jim Hoff talking about how the country is dying. And so conservatives, the more thoughtful ones, are aware of the collapse. They are seeing the destruction, the end of it. And let me just repeat the quote he said. This Jim Hoff said, "We are living through the collapse of American civilization." And he also said, "Democrats want the destruction of the United States. They see the country, its history, its laws, and its people as irredeemably flawed. The country needs to be rebuilt in a new global socialist system." So these conservatives are, this Jim Hoff represents all the conservatives who see the destruction. They see the collapse of the country, but they turn around and say, this is happening because Democrats are trying to destroy the foundations of this country and change it to something new. And we don't need anything new. Leave us alone. We don't need to change. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. That's their mentality. But they don't realize it's broke because the system that they want to return to is what led to the breaking to begin with. But they don't want to admit that because to them, any radical transformation is becoming a communist country. That's the only, when you say radical, the country needs a fundamental transformation, the first thing they think about is you want us to become communists. And no. And they've been deceived and like idiots. They've been fooled like little babies. It's as if the enemy is coming and telling them, hey, you have to, anyone who comes talking to you about building a bridge to a new place is telling you that they want to build a bridge towards a communist society. And then conservatives go, oh, yes, that's right. We just need to stay where we are. We don't need a bridge to any place. And they know the collapse is coming. The collapse of the nation is coming. The cultural collapse, and it's represented by the invasion of these illegal aliens from third world countries. Because the country is about to be, the United States is about to become a third world country in 1 year. If we don't change something, if there's no sign of any reaction from the coma we're in, then we will die and become a third world country, a full-blown third world country. And if that happens, then America is going to become a dangerous place to live in, because that protection that's there now will be gone, just like it was taken away from Latin America. It's going to be gone from this country. And people who are of character, of integrity, are going to be subject to death, or physical and a suppression of life. That's what's going to happen. Even if things still look normal on the outside, being an American of principle is going to be a dangerous thing to be. Just like being a person of principle is a dangerous thing to be in Latin America. If you're a person of principle in Latin America, you'll end up dead, literally. And I mean that in a very physical, literal way. You'll end up dead. And the same, and we'll end up kind of with the same thing here in America. If the country doesn't respond, it's this, and it's represented by this invasion of illegal aliens. The third world countries coming in. And conservatives see the destruction, and they still don't want to change. And that's what that represents. And the third thing we talked about, the shipping of illegals, and it looks like, you know, Ron DeSantis seems to be kind of one of the few people who are doing more than talking. We've been in the Civil War comments that we've shared in previous audio snippets. We've talked about how the Civil War seemed to be plagued. That period seemed to be plagued with people who talked the talk but never walked the walk. People like Lincoln. It was just talk, 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 and never doing anything real to make a real change. It's like this unwillingness to really do, you know, to back up the talk with action. But DeSantis is a little bit different from that. He's not the typical Republican who just talks, talks, talks. He does things. He's like, okay, I'm going to prove to you with actions that I believe in this. And he goes ahead and does it. But what you can see in that third sign is that the people, the few people in the Republican Party who are willing to go ahead and do actions are not thinking far enough. Because if he thought far enough, he would be sending them to Puerto Rico. And the reason why he's not sending them to Puerto Rico is that he still does not have an understanding of a full understanding of what this cultural invasion is doing. Because if you asked him, I'm pretty sure that if you had a private conversation with him without him being concerned about what people might say, he doesn't really care that much, but let's say we took out any concerns whatsoever and we just had the full, sincere words from his heart, and you asked him about Hispanics, I'm pretty sure that he would say, oh, they're hardworking people, they're good people, blah, 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 blah. And he wouldn't ever talk about the problems in the Hispanic culture, even though Florida is, you know, full of Hispanics. Miami, you go to Miami, it's just like almost many people say like a Caribbean, Spanish Caribbean, Hispanic Caribbean city. And, you know, obviously that's in part because of all the Cubans there. But so he's been in contact with the Hispanic culture. The Cuban culture is a little bit different from the rest of the Hispanic culture. So you would, but even so, there are a lot of people from other places aside from Cuba in Florida. So you would think that he's been exposed to the Hispanic culture, but he's not aware of how evil it is. From his sincere heart, he wouldn't say the things that we're saying in these audio snippets about the Hispanic culture, how evil and destructive it is. So he doesn't understand, and that's why he doesn't fight fire with fire when it comes to the Hispanics. I would throw the Hispanic illegals at Puerto Rico, at the Hispanic island of Puerto Rico, and say, hey, you Hispanic, you deal with this. And I'm going to kind of shove it in your face, you Hispanics, you Hispanic culture, you're an evil culture, and I'm going to use your own evil against you. But he doesn't think that way. So that's a reflection of how the few people who are trying to be a bridge or be a source of action are not thinking far enough, and they don't have the understanding. They see it as a conflict of, oh, these illegal aliens come with traditions that are not from the founding fathers and the American tradition, that's not the problem. Because the founding fathers, in fact, are part of the problem of why we are where we are now. So it's not that the illegal aliens represent the end of the founding fathers system. It's not that. It's because they come with evil, cultural evil. It doesn't matter if they are different from the founding fathers or the American traditions of the past. It's that they come with evil. That's the problem. And they are a contrast with the American society in terms of the good things the American society had, aside from the founding fathers. It's belief in law and order. It's a belief in doing what's right, being people of principle and character, and a certain level of integrity that's not prevalent in the Hispanic culture. That they do come to clash against that, but he doesn't see it that way. He sees it in terms of traditions, the founding fathers, the tradition, the Constitution, and our American history and system and values and blah blah blah. But that's not why they are a threat. The illegal aliens are a threat because they are just plain evil. It's an evil culture. And remember, Trump became popular in 2015-2016 when he began to say these things out loud, and when he began to criticize the illegal Mexicans and, you know, how they are coming here and raping and doing all these things, and he got a lot of flack for that, but he also riled up the base because he said things that people know deep in their hearts are true. And you say, oh, Mexicans are not rapists. They are sometimes literally. And when it's not literal, it's figurative. Because these illegals come to rape America. They don't come to say, like the people from Europe who came in the past who said, I want to live in freedom and I want to live in this wonderful country called America. And they would see the Statue of Liberty and say, oh, this, what a great nation, what an opportunity to be in this country. They don't think of it that way. They come here to make money. That's all they care about. And once they make money, they go back. A lot of them just, they keep traveling back to Latin America. And most of them, when they get old, they want to retire and go back and live in the hellholes that they came from because they're more comfortable there. They don't like it here. They just are here because they want the money. So it's like a rapist. They just come here to rape and get, you know, get their jollies, and then they leave. They don't come here to because they believe this is better than what they left behind. No, what they left behind is not better economically, but morally and culturally, they believe that their culture is superior. They deep in their hearts believe that they have a better culture than the American culture. They just want the money. That's raping the country. That's rape. That's tantamount to raping it. Just coming in, using it for their own benefit, and then leaving. You know, Trump kind of began to say these things boldly, and then he backed down from it eventually. And so this third sign of the Puerto Rico thing and the shipping of illegals is kind of a reflection of, yeah, there are some people out there who are trying to do more than just talk, but even they don't have the full-blown understanding. They don't transition. It's as if the bridge was there with these people, then there'd be a bridge that goes across the U.S. into Puerto Rico, across the Caribbean into Puerto Rico to send all these illegals. But because there is no desire to go beyond the known limits, they keep shipping the illegals within the country. I hope you're seeing what I'm trying to say here. It's a symbolism of how we are not willing to go across, because when Republicans and conservatives get to the edge of the water, you know, and they look at the ocean, they just see nothingness, and they say we can't go beyond this point because there's nothing out there to go to, nothing but communism, and they never venture out into the sea, and that's why we're stuck in here, and the country is dying. And if we don't get out to sea, to this new place, we'll be killed because the hordes are coming, literally, the hordes of illegals, in a sense, are coming at us to destroy us. We have to cross the sea, and we're not doing it. And that's what that third sign represents. And then we talked about the Iran rebellion that's going on as we speak, and it's getting more and more violent. And conservatives keep talking about it, and they keep criticizing the Joe Bite Me and the Democrats for not doing anything, for not caring, for being hypocrites, that they are for women's rights, and women are being shot dead and mistreated and abused in Iran, and the Democrats are not doing anything. And yes, and everything, all of that is right. But then I'd ask them, if they were in power, what would they do? And go ask a Republican or a conservative. Okay, you criticize the Democrats for being hypocrites about Iran and all this, but what would you do? What do you think we should do? And I can assure you, most of them would say, oh, that's their problem. You know, at the end of the day, you know, you take away their criticism, their sarcastic criticism of the Democrat Party, and then you would end up with the same opinion that they are criticizing. They would do nothing as well, because it's, oh, they always are against wars, and oh, we don't want to go to a foreign war. You know, we're America first, and this and that and the other. We care about America number one. Let's stop being the world's policeman. And they would do nothing. At the end, they wouldn't do anything to help the people of Iran. Maybe other than just this empty vocal support, which is, again, talk, 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 but no action. And that also means that the people who are really willing to fight, to put their lives on the line, which is represented by the people of Iran, right now they're literally putting their lives on the line by rebelling against that vicious dictatorship, they are going to be left alone. The country, America, both the Democrats and the Republicans and the conservatives, they are all willing to let those people die. So the people who are willing to be bridges into a new era, they are not going to have any support from anyone. And that's why the country's dying, because the people who are willing to fight, those of us who are willing to fight and have given our lives in many ways to enable a transformation, are not going to be supported in any way, shape, or form, in any significant way. And it's like we're on our own. And the people of the world are crying out for a change. And we, America, are supposed to be the light of the world, that light on that shining hill to spread freedom like this light beacon to the world. And we're not doing it. And that's what we were here for. And part of our transformation is to really fulfill that calling. But conservatives don't care for that. Conservatives just want their own little country and their own little island, own little world. And they just want to be happy, happy, happy by themselves on their own. And they don't understand that we've been given all the blessings we've been given as a responsibility. With all that blessing and all that freedom comes the responsibility to make a change in the world. And conservatives will never understand that. And because they continue with their selfishness and their inability to understand that we have been blessed because we've been given the power to change the world, because they don't understand that, they don't realize that by saying we're not going to be the light, a shining hill, we don't want to be the world's policeman, then all of those blessings will be taken away. And then we will be poor, and then we'll become a third world country, as we are on the verge of becoming. You can't do like Cain and say, am I my brother's keeper? You can't do that, because if you continue doing that, conservatives, then you will, all the blessings this country has will be taken away. Like, why give all this to this country if this country's not going to do anything with it? If it's only going to use it for itself, then why give it to you? Like, if you're going to help someone and you know that you're helping someone who's only going to help himself, eventually you're going to say, why am I going to help that guy? Because all he's doing is helping himself. He doesn't forward it, doesn't pay forward to other people. He's just there for himself. Why invest in a person who only cares about himself? And then the country will lose its blessing. So the Iranian thing is going on. My heart aches for what is going on there. And we're not doing anything about it. Nothing. Except using it as a political weapon to criticize the Democrats. That's all we're doing it for. But at the end of the day, conservatives wouldn't lift a finger to help one Iranian because it's not their problem. Just that to them, it was not a problem that Saddam Hussein was terrorizing the Iraqi people who were living right next door to Iran. It was not their problem. If Bush, as we said 100 times before, if Bush had done the right thing and conducted the war the right way, the Iranian regime would have fallen right after the fall of Saddam Hussein in Iraq, because the American presence would have been so strong and powerful that the Iranian people would have been willing to fight back in 2003, 2004, and rise up, because they would have said, hey, the Americans are on the other side of the border. So if the Iranians get tough with us, they are going to invade Iran, and the Iranian regime is going to know that, and they're going to be full of fear, and they're not going to be willing to fight us as strongly. And they would have risen up, and they would have succeeded, because the American presence would have been on the border. If the thing had been done right, as we said, Iraq had to be taken. It was taken in 21 days. Baghdad was taken. Then we would have had, instead of listening to the son of a bitch, I forget his name, semi-black guy who was very influential in the Bush administration. And if he had not listened to all the rhinos and all the trash that was around him, and he would have said, okay, we're going to go full throttle on this. He would have sent the troops to the border with Syria on the west of Iraq and to the border with Iran on the east, and said, okay, we are going to invade Syria if you don't surrender your dictatorship. And Assad, as a yellow-bellied coward, would have left, and Syria would have also become a democratic nation, and there would have been no Syrian refugee crisis, no Muslim invasion of Europe under the pretext of the Syrian refugee crisis. So many things would have changed, and then just our presence on the border with Iran would have emboldened the Iranian people, and the Iranian regime would have fallen, and then there would have been democracy in Iran, and there would have been this spread of democracy across the Middle East in incredible ways. But none of that happened because George Bush pulled the effort out of Iraq, in a sense. And it's like, okay, we just toppled Saddam Hussein. That's all we want to do. We just want to make sure things are okay, and then more or less okay, and then get the hell out of here. He didn't understand it was an opportunity to transform the entire region. And if he had done that, there would have been no terrorist infiltration into Iraq, no illegal aliens into Iraq, who were the ones responsible for all the terrorism and all the attacks, and then the instability that led to the country, America, having to stay there for so long. We would have been so ironic if we had been there full throttle and done everything, boom, 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 boom. We would have been able to leave very quickly, because Iraq would have stabilized. There would have been no terrorist or destabilizing threats from either side of Iraq, from Syria and Jordan, or from Iran. And we would have been able to leave very quickly, in 2 years, more or less, and we would have left a plethora of democracies flourishing in that region. But it never happened. And now they're just there fighting on their own, and they have no one to support them. Ironically, they tried to rise up in 2009, and Joe Biden was in the White House back then as the, quote, vice president. And sadly enough, they're rising up again, and there was no, and again, Joe Biden is in the White House, so they have no support from America. And I saw this comment on a conservative website from a conservative saying, "Well, these guys are idiots. They should have risen up during the Trump years. Now it's their loss." And I read that statement. I go, "What a that's conservatism." In a very summarized way, complete idiocy. What an idiot to even say that. And what, would you have supported Trump sending troops or something to threaten the Iranian regime? No, he would never have done that. He never supported such a thing. So he's just talking nonsense. Like, he's blaming the Iranian people for not having risen up during the Trump years. He doesn't understand the circumstances. Things didn't develop. It's not like, okay, let's rise up right now. You know, it's a set of circumstances that happened that have triggered what's going on right now. It's not that they were waiting for Trump to leave to rise up. Is he that stupid to think that that's what's determining this rise? This just happened. It's like an organic thing. And it just happened to happen without Trump being in the White House and with Joe Biden being in the White House illegally again. So so all these four signs. So the Palin election, losing the special election, talks about the country. It's also a microcosm of the story of the American political party system, the death of the Democrat Party, represented by Nick Begich in 72, and the death of the Republican Party, represented by the death of Don Young in 2020, and how the country is saying we still want to live under a dead party system. And that's why they didn't want Sarah Palin, because Sarah Palin represented the opposite. The other two candidates represented the Democrat establishment and the Republican establishment. Sarah Palin was something different. The people of Alaska said, no, we don't want her, because they really wanted change. They would have voted for her in mass, and the other two candidates would have lost drastically. Sarah Palin used to be the governor of Alaska, so it's not like she didn't have enough poll or name recognition to be able to achieve that. And the people of Alaska still said, no, we don't want anyone who rocks the boat like that. So that's what Sarah Palin and that election represent. In that election, that represents how America wants to stay in a dead party system and doesn't want anyone to be a bridge. They want to continue in the bridge to nowhere. Pretending to be building a bridge to someplace, but it's to nowhere. But to the actual bridge that we really need is not welcome. America does not want a bridge and wants to stay in the debt system that it is right now. Then the second sign, the illegal aliens and Jim Hoff's comment, it shows that conservatives are aware that they want to, that the country is collapsing, but when they are spoken to that we need a bridge to a new system, they go, no, we don't want a bridge to a new system, because that is going to take us to communism and a socialist, globalist system. And that's not true. And they have accepted the lie, and they're not willing to make a change. So the American population in general does not want the bridge. The avant-garde conservatives who are thinking a little bit more than the rest of the Americans don't want the bridge either, because they think it will take them to Cuba and Karl Marx. And then the third sign, Puerto Rico and the shipping of illegal aliens, is that the conservatives in America who are willing to do more than talk and are willing to do actions like Ron DeSantis are doing these actions, but they're staying within the confines of a very limited understanding. And that's why they're not shipping the illegals all the way to Puerto Rico across the Caribbean. And they're just shipping it within the continental United States. And yes, it is clever and it's a good strategy, but the better option would be to do one of two things, as we said before, just ship them to Puerto Rico or deport them back. And you say, oh, well, they don't have the constitutional power. Then sue me. That's what I would have said. Sue me. Go ahead. Make my day. Sue me. And try to get the FBI to come arrest me. Let's see what happens. You know, people are willing to stir things up and say, okay, the whole system has collapsed. I don't believe in this system anymore. Let's just have it implode, because the house is condemned. You know, it's like a house that's no longer stable. And we're still trying to live in it as if it's okay, and trying to repair a few windows here and a few wall holes there, and thinking, oh, the house will be fine. No, the house is about to collapse. You don't get out of the house, you're going to die. That's what I keep, and it's like the truth keeps saying that to America. And America says, no, we're staying here. We're staying put. And the house is about to cave in on them. And this Puerto Rico and the shipping of illegals sign is representative that of that the people who want to do something are still doing it within the confines of the house that's about to collapse. They're not willing to go outside of the house, and are not aware of the nature of the evil that is upon us. They don't understand it. They see a certain evil, yeah, they recognize it, but they don't see the other evil. They don't see they don't see things at a higher level. They just see things at this very basic level of understanding. All these, just like liberals are indoctrinated, conservatives are also indoctrinated with a lot of very template ideas. They have these thinking templates, and they just keep reusing them over and over again. And that's why they can't even understand the cultural problem of illegal aliens. And they only see it from the context, oh, they are coming to destroy the American system that our founding fathers started because they don't understand it. It's not their tradition. That's not the problem. The problem is that these people come with evil values, evil mindset, and that not that they don't know about the founding fathers. It's because they just plain evil. And they don't understand that. And because they don't understand evil on its own, that's why they don't see the evil in the Constitution. They don't see the evil in the system that the founding fathers left behind. They don't see the evil in federalism because they don't understand evil at a level beyond their templates. And that's what all of that represents in that third sign. And then the fourth sign is the Iran rebellion means the real bridges, the people who have put their life on the line and are saying, we're willing to throw our life in sacrifice to bring about the transformation of this country. Those people are going to be left on their own. America's saying, we're not going to fight for them. We're going to use them as tools to expose the hypocrisy of my enemy, but I'm not going to do anything to really help them. And those are the four signs that America is not responding. So that's why these four random things that we talked about in the previous audio snippet, even though they seem like, you know, like a hodgepodge of non-related things, you know, random things, and that we could have talked about so many other things. No, there was a pattern there, and I hope you see the pattern. And I sincerely do not believe that. I don't see any sign of hope. I don't think we are. It doesn't look like we're going to wake up. Maybe something dramatic is going to happen, like that pass from Manning to Tyree. Maybe, but you get tired of hoping and hoping. I've hoped for so many decades, and it's not. It doesn't seem like America wants change. I don't think they do. And when the country dies, or if the country dies in less than a year, it's just going to mean the collapse of the country as a society. Violence is going to escalate, and we're going to see, you know, the economy just deteriorating in a very fundamental, profound, and irreversible way. And I think that in a 30-year period after that, this country is just going to look like any Hispanic country, collapsed completely economically, and who knows what's going to be happening around here if we die in less than a year. And we are on our way. But we'll see. Thank you very much for listening.